Imbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hello, listeners out there. This is Ryan O'Halloran, VP of Security Strategy here at Imbalance IT, bringing you episode 10 of The Balancing Act called Cloud Storage Cost Dexterity. Today, we're here to discuss cloud storage and how it pertains to FinOps as a framework to maximize the value of the cloud and new technology investments. FinOps practices involve collaboration across engineering, operations, and finance, establishing financial accountability and data-driven decision-making. So first, I'd like to welcome my guest, Mr. Michael Kaplan, Chief Technology Officer here at Imbalance. Michael, great to see you.
Good to see you too, sir.
And then I also have here, warm welcome to Mr. Abhishek Uthak.
Thank you.
Abhishek's a FinOps practitioner and founder of Lucidity. Lucidity is a solution enabling cloud block storage to deliver the highest level of performance at the most optimized cost through automation. Abhishek, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, yes.
Would you be willing to kick us off a little bit with your background and what led you into FinOps and your profession?
Interesting. So, obviously, what I have seen is storage is always treated as a son of a lesser god, right? It's always an unsung story of cloud infrastructure. Like, though these drummer, understand it as a drummer in your band, right? Though they are not in limelights, but if any beats goes off, things falls apart, right? I come from all the automated industries, so I love working with technologies that automates and gives some impactful output, whether it is having a software that helps in designing any products for mechanical engineering or a platform that helps venture capitals identify the next $1 billion bet, right? When we shifted our focus towards cloud, what we broadly found was performance was never a concern.
Sure.
The concern broadly was cost.
Yep.
Right? And when we further analyzed it, we found that the storage plays as a base of the entire cost. However, it's still being treated as a black box. And that's where we thought, let's try to build something for storage, because there's a lot of wastage happening, a lot of over-provisioning happening, right? And people are just trying to over-provision it just to keep it safe. And honestly, FinOps was not in the mind when we spun it up. It was all about survival.
Yeah, it's like that classic over-provisioning mindset, right?
Yes.
Let's just make sure that it doesn't go down.
Correct.
But throw enough at it, keep it going type thing.
Correct.
Michael, where do you see, in your mind, some of the challenges in the cloud storage landscape? Are there particular gaps you're seeing as you're consulting customers through storage solutions?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest challenge that I'm seeing is it's still this very much legacy mindset of, I had an on-premises data center, I was going to spin up a virtual machine, my OS disks and my data disks, if I'm spinning up just a classic virtual machine, needed to be over allocated because I never wanted to go back to ask for storage to, you know, extend the volume. There were performance impacts depending on the time frame. There could have been, you know, unnecessary downtime. And it just became this very inefficient thing. Fast forward a little bit, storage technologies adopt thin provisioning, and that, you know, started to exacerbate the problem, because now the storage engineers, the benefit was they got to purchase less storage and you could allocate to your heart's content.
Right.
Unfortunately, as you start to pivot into migrating to the public cloud, that thoughtfulness around how much am I allocating, particularly when it comes to block storage, just never changed. I still need 500 gigs, a terabyte, and I'm only going to consume, you know, a much smaller portion of that. And the downside to a lot of that is, unfortunately, block storage is the one that you're paying for how much you're allocating, not for how much you're consuming. So it's helping our clients in the conversations that we have around how do we pivot to, you know, thinking about things more appropriately, especially once you start thinking about overall cost per gig in a cloud world. It's where the data is persisted, but you're just driving a lot of inefficiencies in your overall spend.
A difficult challenge for sure, and an expensive one. Abhishek, how does Lucidity help achieve the kind of cost visibility and transparency we're talking about, just to understand how much you should have?
Yeah, correct. I'll just take a step back and tell you what kind of challenges that we have also seen.
Sure. Oh, please.
So the major problem was, first was the focus. So if you look at the cloud now, even the hyperscalers, their focus is primarily on compute.
Yes.
They talk about reserve instances, savings plans. They have auto-scaling for compute, right? But no one talks about storage. Right. The second problem is visibility issues. So when we talk about visibility, we means no business users have idea on what the disk utilization is, as you rightly mentioned, right? And the technical side of it, the tech team knows that there is no technology that can auto scale your storage. So they don't even pick their brain on, you know, how much they want to go for it, right? Then last and the critical part is data is exploding. So I was just going through one of the reports. What I found was, right now in 2025, we are having 600 zettabytes of data. So one zettabyte.
Z.
Yes. So one Z is like 1 billion terabytes, right?
That's a lot.
And by 2035, it's gonna cross 2,000 zettabytes. So imagine the kind of wastage we are estimating in next 10 years into the
cloud. Oh man, yeah, the compound waste on that just gets
insane.
Huge. Yeah, so this is a problem that's, like, to Michael's point, only gonna be exacerbated as things continue, and it's better to get ahead of it now, so not only save some money, but to be ready for the explosion that's gonna continue.
Well, I think as clients have migrated into the cloud, while some of them have taken the thoughtful approach of, I'm going to understand which applications make the most sense and have that burst ability, I will refactor my applications, but more often than not, we're still seeing just your classic lift and shift.
Correct.
And unfortunately, VMs are probably the most inefficient use of any spend in the cloud, because you're allocating a lot more for your operating system, you're allocating a lot more storage, and even when the virtual machine is powered off, you're still paying for the if it's a t-shirt size in something like Azure, or if you're doing, you know, true, you know, gigabyte sizing in an environment like AWS, you're still paying for that capacity. And if you're only consuming 30% of it, it's still wildly inefficient from an overall utilization standpoint.
Yeah, and I'm sure the next challenge in itself, right, is even with the tool, there's collaboration amongst all the business units, right? Can you talk a little bit about that? Where are you seeing the maturity of the business units working together for financial accountability with this sort of thing? Or what do you think it'll take? And I know this is a loaded question, but right, even with the right tools and observability, I know that, you know, everyone has to be focused on the goal. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that a little bit.
So I see that to make FinOps successful, it's like everyone has to take their own responsibilities, right? Whether it's engineering team, or you have a finance team, or you have a leadership.
Sure.
Everyone has to play their own bit.
Yep.
Now, I'll give you an example for one of the customer where we have saved like 42% of their optimized bills. The best part was we have been able to bring in finance and technology into a same Slack conversation.
Wow.
Right? And that was
Big
win. That was a big win, right? And when I look at it from the holistic perspective, what I see is it's a shared responsibility, right? But leadership holds the accountability of it.
Sure.
It's like a family, right? Though you have, and it has to come as a culture within the organization, right? If you look at the fathers of the family, if you have a bigger family, right? They cultivate these cultures, so the kids and the generations knows how to do cost optimization. Right, so I look at it from that perspective.
Well, and I think too, you know, the interesting part about your solution in terms of what it has been able to provide is, you know, right-sizing activities in the cloud have always been, particularly when you're focused on storage and especially in block storage, right-sizing is painful. You have a certain amount of time that you're able to do. You know, capacity adds are one thing, but shrinking activities, disruptive, you have to take downtime, you potentially have to migrate your data depending on how you're going about things, and you can only do that a certain amount of time, so even if there are efficiencies to be gained, you're still struggling with the fact that if you have to manually do that process, you only can maybe do it once or twice a day, and if you have an application that has a wide variability of change, your opportunities for those savings are significantly diminished versus maybe there's a one-time right-sizing that you can do, but how efficient is that? And do you want your teams focused on having to manually do those efforts versus, you know, potentially looking at something that feels a bit magical but can help with that overall automation story?
Correct. And then just to add on this automation piece, what we have seen is there is an irony to this story. One side we talk about cost savings because you're over-provisioned, but other side you still have disks which are giving you downtime.
Sure.
Even Google was down 5 years back just because of the shortage of block storage.
Sure.
Very specifically, right? So VM doesn't know where they're writing into which disks, right? So until unless you have a monitoring tool which gives you the idea, you will never come to know that which disk is about to go down, right? So one side you have a lot of disks which are over-provisioned, and other side you have disks which are about to die, and they become your culprit for downtimes, right? So that's where the automation helps, not only to give you the better utilization, but also to make sure that you save your revenue by avoiding these potential downtimes.
Yeah, you can sort of forecast those types of events.
Correct.
As opposed to becoming an imminent failure. Question for you. We talked about block storage, right, first. So to cap off on that, I'd be curious in your thoughts from what you've seen, how many businesses are drastically, or even on an average, if it's possible, over-provisioned? What type of savings are you seeing? What type of reallocation are you seeing? Whether that be financial or just, you know, storage density. I'd be curious on average, you know, how bad is it?
So I'll give you a good context. So, for example, if you look at the block storage, it contributes anywhere between 10 to 15% of your overall cloud bill.
Yep.
Right? Now, for all the customers or the potential clients where we have done the assessment, which we can talk about, we have seen no one has exceeded more than 25 or 27% of utilization, which means if Lucidity helps them reduce at least 50%, 40 to 50% of their cost, we are going to impact at least on 6 to 7% of their current annual cloud cost bill.
Wow.
And that's significant.
Absolutely.
That is significant.
Yes.
And I think, you know, part of the challenge too, and what I know you work with a lot of clients is helping them understand what that total estate is. You know, they have reporting that can help, you know, identify some of that, but unless they're heavily utilizing, you know, a very good observability tool or implementing kind of some of the native tool, the advanced monitoring tools that the public cloud providers have, normally operations just sees, I've allocated a 512 gig managed disk in an Azure VM, and they really don't understand how much they're truly, you know, potentially wasting from a dollars and cents standpoint by not optimizing what they have.
Correct.
And I think one of the things that we've, you know, both of our organizations have done with a few of our clients is helping to perform that overall assessment to help just create that baseline story to help clients really kind of understand from just a very simple analysis, to your point, that 6 to 7% of your total cloud spend is potentially just, you know, overspending for minimal benefit.
Yeah, that makes sense. And obviously, FinOps is a challenge that's more broad and more robust, even outside of block storage. So I know that's a fantastic place to start. I'd love to hear you guys talk a little bit for a minute about how organizations that maybe are doing this well, are they using multiple tools? Are they using native tools?
Sure.
More broadly, right, once we have the actors in here and the business units are in alignment, this is something we want to do, we want to get better at. How can you go about sort of that evaluation process, if you will, today for the variety of different areas you might see these gains?
Yeah. So when I look at these enterprises, what I see is everyone has their own set of entire FinOps tool belts, right? Now, FinOps starts from culture. So there are a lot of different aspects to FinOps. First is how you start adopting these journeys. How are you hiring people, right? What is this message that you are inculcating in the employees within your system, right? How they are being moved from cost savings to cost avoidance.
Yes.
Right? Now, everyone then have a shortlisted tools that they want, right? From your monitoring to compute optimization, storage optimizations, Kubernetes, for that example, mm-hmm. right? And a right set of tools will definitely help them drive a lot of cost.
Sure.
Right? What I feel is it's not just about cost saving. It's about having a control on your infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Right, and when you have better control on your infrastructure, it makes more business sense.
Sure.
Right.
And I think at initial scale, once a client migrates, they'll figure out some sort of FinOps tool that can help with the overall cloud cost optimization. And the benefit of those solutions is they'll call out certain opportunities for savings, but then it's important, you know, organizationally to build that context around, okay, I can figure out the high level of reserved instance coverage that might give me, you know, 80% coverage to handle some of the variability in my environment. Those are obvious wins, and that's something that those solutions do very, very well. It's the other opportunities within that, and then you start getting into, are there private pricing agreements or contractual commits? That will, again, help drive some additional savings. But then it starts to get into the conversation. My next opportunities for savings are either refactoring my applications to go from a virtual machine to maybe a container or a function as a service type solution that will, again, just further reduce the amount that I'm paying for, you know, the application or the business outcome that I'm trying to achieve. But it then still requires your engineering teams to build that level of effort, determine at a business level, does this make sense to even invest that amount of time? And for those applications that may not be revenue generating or may provide, you know, significantly lower value to the overall health of the business, it may not be worth the engineer's time to invest potentially hundreds of hours to do a whole refactoring. So then it's important and incumbent upon organizations to identify where are the potential overspends or the waste, and that's where you need to build intelligence and automation to help with that overall management. Again, back to the conversation of resizing operation and block storage. A lot of these tools will point out some of the just high-level opportunities, but are you going to accept the potential downtime or the risks associated with that? And more often than not, organizations will just say no because they just don't understand what that could mean to the application or the performance or any of those, and that leads to savings opportunities from being solved.
Yeah, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong too, it seems like in all the hyperscalers in the cloud, even though they have some type of native tool, it's more about how you reallocate what you've spent to something.
Right.
Than saving money, of course. So the insights are there into, hey, you're not using all this that well, so move things around.
It's so traditionally focused on compute, which is a lot easier to do from a resizing standpoint. And yes, you will get one of the largest potential savings there. And then if you're at a scale where you can have a contractual commit with a public cloud provider, again, that will drive some additional savings opportunities. There's always those types of organizations that will help with those types of functionality. At a certain point, it becomes either an engineering problem or an automation problem. And that's where you have to look at solutions that can help automate out some of the manual processes that still exist in, you know, savings opportunities.
That makes sense. Earlier, right? It's a big thing to tackle, right? This FinOps, right? We can start typically with an assessment. You mentioned an assessment earlier.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what an assessment like that would entail? Because I know, like, to Michael's point, right, people are worried about what if it takes things down, what if it doesn't work correctly. How can you do this with fidelity and caution to be able to get the outcome that you're trying to achieve? And I'd just love to hear a little bit about how you do that.
Sure, great question. So our technology works on automation, right? However, when we build the technology, what we found was we have to give those visibilities to the audience that does it make sense to even talk to Lucidity
sure.
at first stage? And that's where the assessment tool came up. Now, what this assessment does, this is an agentless mechanism. It's just a script that you run in the system. And this enables all the native technologies of these hyperscalers and extract some storage metadata. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about these storage metadata, these are primary disk utilization, of course, the disk names, IOPS, throughput, volume, kind of just the metadata, right? And it relays back in the form of a CSV file.
Okay.
So once the CSV file is downloaded, it's very simple. You just run it, close your VM, it'll work at the backend, and it'll throw you a CSV file for the entire account. Upload it into the script, in the application, and then it will throw you the entire metrics. Now, the metrics is important. So first thing that we talk about is what's your current disk utilization? How many ideal disks you got, right? And what will happen if you deploy Lucidity in this environment? How much cost you're gonna save? So all in all, we give them a black and white idea around whether it makes sense for them even to go for the POCs or other things, but it is a very good visibility how much cost they can save. Mm-hmm.
That's great. To get that general idea up front is, you know, big, has a big effect on nobody wasting their time and also seeing how valuable that is. If they decide to move forward into kind of additional phases of this, what does that look like?
Yeah. So what we do is once they have the understanding on how much money they're potentially going to save, right? We move on to something called as POC or POV, proof of concept, proof of values, whichever they want. And what they ideally do is they pick out one or two accounts, largely from the dev environment. They deploy Lucidity, right? And we recommend running some 15 to 17 test cases that we have from our customers, because that gives them a better idea on how to check the compatibility of the product, right?
Sure.
It's just a 3 days task. So the interesting part of this POC is the moment you are done with your POC in 3 years, you can actually start realizing some savings live. So what you see in assessment, you can see them having live. And once that makes logic, you just sign the contract and go ahead with the deployment.
Gotcha. Another thing that came to mind is, you know, if a customer had an existing commit of some kind, and maybe they have to honor that, you know, commitment,
absolutely.
You kind of, it's reliant on where you're at in your refresh or your contract, correct? Mm-hmm. Do you typically see savings anyway at that point, or does it push a little bit?
Yeah, you'll definitely see savings. It really comes down to the fact that what we've done is now remove wastage, and now usually organizations have a backlog of projects or activities that they've been looking to fund, and now this can actually help fund maybe, you know, a new instance, or maybe, you know, adopting, you know, an AI solution or doing some test use cases there. And I think the important thing, and I don't think we've called it out yet, is the benefit of even doing the POC is we're not inserting anything into the data path for the virtual machine. You know, more traditionally what you would have seen from, you know, some of the storage vendors out there and the OEMs, what they want to do is create a layer in between your virtual machine and the underlying storage, and use maybe a traditional kind of storage array concept, because then you can maybe get, you know, savings through, you know, deduplication or compression, and, you know, operate as more of a traditional, you know, compute, you know, three-layer compute network and storage. Mm-hmm. But the downside is if you ever need to move away or you decide you don't want to renew, all of a sudden you're basically fully locked into the solution. And I think one of the benefits, and we haven't necessarily talked about that, and maybe you can, is how Lucidity operates so that you don't get inserted into the data path. You're just helping to optimize using cloud-native capabilities as opposed to automating through, you know, a data insertion layer is kind of how I would describe it.
Go ahead. Yeah, just to elaborate, we don't come into the I/O path of the application, right, whatsoever. So your application continues to write to the disks whether Lucidity is working or not, right? Lucidity works directly with the file system, right? Accordingly, it just goes and does the shrink and expand operations. And the kind of data, or I can say the metadata that it interacts with, is just the storage metadata. So we don't touch what data you got in your disk. We just work on the provisioned space that you are left with, right? And based on the throughput of the disk, based on the IOPS requirements, based on utilization, we optimize that space for you. So if you have 20 GB of data running on 100 GB of disk, what we do is we just go and based on performance, we will shrink it down to 25 GB or 30 GB. And that's it. We just work on the provision space. So nothing happens to your data. It remains as is. If it is encrypted, it remains encrypted. So we don't touch it. Yes.
And can this continue running throughout the life cycle of your storage just permanently so that you're continuing to avoid future costs, right? Because we just talked about that, and right off the bat, if you were pending a provisioning, you know, something else that you didn't have the money for, now you can open that up. You know, I'd just be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think automation is the key, right? And we have built the technology that is like set and forget. Mm-hmm. Just set it up for all your old VMs. For the new VMs, you can get it baked in your Terraforms. Mm-hmm. So okay. Anything that comes out new, you really don't have to deploy Lucidity in it. Yep. It's by default there. Just set it, forget it, and you really don't have to even allocate a resource who is going to come and look at what my block storage utilization is going to be.
That's a really nice way to go about provisioning it.
Well, I think the benefit there, too, is that if you start off with, you know, the analysis and doing the proof of value, you get the benefit of building the trust that the solution works in a low-risk environment, and then once they see it's meeting its requirements, that's when you can deploy it at scale, or if you need to do like a slow and steady rollout. We have a client that's kind of looking at some initial test dev environments and accounts in their AWS environment. And there are some that will be a very good fit, and then some that, you know, maybe aren't ready for, you know, fully turning over the keys to the solution. But the benefit is all it's doing at that point is building that trust that this solution is doing exactly what it said it would do. They can do the test of, you know, having Lucidity work, pulling it out and making sure that nothing happens to their environment. And again, because it's not actually inserting itself into the data path, you don't have to worry about, you know, to your point, the solution just turning off or stopping. If it stops working, that all of a sudden you're going to experience some major catastrophic outage that you wouldn't want to experience.
That's huge. Low risk, high reward. And then, you know, a win like that would be so profound that it's a sounding board for, hey, FinOps is working, it's a thing. What else can we do, right? What else can we do? And my next question would be around, where do you see it going in that regard? You know, it sounds like the block storage side, you know, solutions like you said, that's a great place to start. Where do you see the market going with this? Do you see all businesses having a strong FinOps practice over the next 10 years? Do you see more consolidated tooling to do different aspects, or is it going to be special tools for each individual case? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
I can give you the perspective from the storage side of it.
Yeah.
So what I see is the world is moving towards predictive storage economics, mm-hmm. right? And for Lucidity, this is the first tool that is up in the market. We have identified some 4 to 5 major use cases, which are prominently the bigger, that can constantly impact in the cost for the customers.
Sure.
Now, the next product that's going to come in next 1 quarter, we call it as Enlight. Now, that's an intelligent disk tiering module.
Okay.
So what that tool is going to do is, it's going to switch your expensive disks, right, to the standard disks.
Sure.
Or standard disk to your expensive disks based on your performance requirements, right? One of the problems that we have noticed with these hyperscalers is 50 to 60% of the client environment continues to be in the expensive disks.
Sure.
Right? And when they spin it up, they are not sure of what kind of performance they might want to have. So they, to avoid these risks, they go with these disks,
the
right?
Yeah.
And after some time, they realize, hey, I don't need this kind of performance.
Yep.
But what to do? You have no technology in place which can switch you out. Then again, you have a cumbersome issue of process of downtimes, switching the disk to disk, right, do the data transfer, and then no one touches it because you can't touch data. It's a high risk of data loss. So that's a new technology that's going to come up in next 3 months. And this has been request come from the customer's perspective,
sure,
to us that we have built up, and it has an amazing response as of now.
No, that's great. I think, you know, storage tiering is not a new concept. It's been around forever. Back when, you know, SSDs first came to market, it was you'd buy a small subset and you'd hope that the algorithm that the storage array had would tier the data appropriately. And now if you have that ability to take advantage of, if you deploy on SSD initially, but the application basically is not performing any I/O, being able to tier down to a much more cost-effective, you know, traditional spinning drive format for the devices would deliver, again, just, you know, not only are you optimizing the overall utilization, but now you're optimizing from a performance standpoint too. It's just that other additional vector that can be optimized and tuned to, again, drive, you know, an additional incremental level of savings.
True.
That's awesome. Now, just for fun, final question. This is the toughest one. Outside of FinOps, what are your passions? What do you do for fun?
Oh, interesting question.
Sit on. From what I've heard,
much harder than FinOps.
Enjoy, you know, from where you live, you know, coming to the United States every now and again, it's a very long flight, so hopefully it's not sitting on airplanes for extended periods.
It's not. I love a lot of city hoppings, so because it matches up with my profession.
Sure.
So I'm on flights every alternate weeks, right, new cities. So I love hopping new cities, talk to people, understand their culture, see how those cultures are, you know, impacting in the innovations in their world, whether it comes as a technology piece or it comes as, you know, normal family household stuff.
Sure.
I recently have picked up golf as well.
Oh, great.
So, nice.
So last Saturday was my first session on golfing. So I had the iron in my hand, and I was looking at what degrees should I start. So, yeah.
Awesome. Best of luck on the golf game. That's going to be the rest of your life, right?
Thank you very much. Yes.
Michael, you want to throw in some fun fact about yourself there?
You know, I think the big thing, to your point, I just love traveling as well. It's something I'm very passionate about, you know, being able to see the world, experience new cultures. It always makes you appreciate what you have, but it's also just great getting that additional level of exposure. So that's something I'm personally passionate about, spending time with my wife, playing with our massive dog. But that's just, you know, that's just the fun part of life, right?
That's awesome, man. Yeah, family for me too. Family, pets, right? I need to do a little more traveling like you fellows and get out there. Amazing. Abhishek, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you,
Michael,
having me.
Of course, thanks for joining.
Appreciate it.
You know, Imbalance and Lucidity, we can help you optimize your cloud financial spend, right? We can leverage deep observability and automation to help you with this. Feel free to reach out to us. Thank you for listening, and we hope you have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Inbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Inbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at inbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.